So there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be outraged and shaking their fist this morning.
Happiness comes from feeling good about yourself.
Breaking the mold on sports radio in Boston.
Is that why I thought of Sesame Street?
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
98.5, The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich, Hardy and for Rich. We're going to get to the big LeBron James deal, but first, Hardy, I teased you about the golf club.
Yeah.
And, the golf club that airs at 4 in the morning on Sundays.
Every third Sunday, 4 a.m. to 4:15 a.m.
Yeah. So a lot
it's Saturday mornings at 7 o'clock. It used to be Celtics at 7. Now it's the Sports Hub Golf Club.
It's called,
every Saturday. We started early this year in March, and it'll go through the golf season here in New England. Every Saturday morning for an hour, it's 7 a.m., and people love it. They love the program.
It's called, Hey, I Was Up All Night on Meth and Taking Apart My Television, So What's on the Radio? This is the other name for it.
The depression when you finally get to sleep and then wake up and see that TV just in pieces. Oh,
well, hey,
it's a shame.
You only got 2 more weeks to look at this sexy mug on the TV.
That's right. Well, yours anyway. Listen,
you know, I got an email from someone who said, I hope it's true you're not going to be on TV anymore. I'll listen to you on the radio, but I don't want to see that ugly mug no more.
Oh, I think you're quite photogenic.
So you know what I did?
Hmm.
So long I could hold my breath.
And?
Passed out.
Guess how long I can hold my breath? 8 seconds.
Right. All right. So what do you got here?
I didn't even train.
All right. So you got your Twitter machine open.
I got the Twitter machine open.
On July 2nd, it's Fast and Furious.
Well, we already said that Ilya said he listens every Saturday. Also had Rich say that he listens every Saturday, not certainly. Morgan says the golf club is the one show I never miss. And then we have a flurry of tweets coming in, Fred, that requires either a correction or a clarification on your part with regard to the Robert Williams situation. Mop.com says, am I the only one noticing that Fred Toucher keeps saying BBW and not BW3 or BW or B-dubs?
Oh, they're talking about my affinity for full-figured women.
Fred said BBWs instead of BWW when abbreviating Buffalo Wild Wings.
Mm-hmm.
That's from Terrence, who also caught on to that. So it depends on what you were really talking about. I thought we were talking about Buffalo, which used to be BW3.
BW3 at Michigan State.
Do you want to know why? Buffalo Wild Wings and Weck. That was the third W.
Oh.
It's the type of roll that they used to serve it up.
And that was that they had their first location at Michigan State.
I think there's one in Indianapolis.
I think that you're wrong.
Well, but the radio station I worked at was right above BW3, and the only reason I lived through those years is we had trade down there.
Okay, so here's the deal, is that the Los Angeles Lakers, and when did this happen yesterday?
Last night.
Okay, last
night. It was relatively late last night.
Yeah, so people might not know about this, but the Lakers agreed to, which is a surprising, 4-year deal, $153 million. So there was a point, though, remember, when everyone said Paul George and perhaps Kawhi Leonard would have to sign before LeBron would do anything. Well, there was a moment where Windhorse gets the news that Paul George is staying in Oklahoma City. So there's like a meeting of the minds. There's 4 people at a desk. And Windhorse, you know, has already started looking at the property in Los Angeles. And he's ready for the big move. And here's the reaction.
Do your face.
This is, I mean, congratulations to the Thunder. Congratulations to Sam.
I mean, his head is in his hands. He's like, I can't believe this is happening. LeBron! LeBron! Where are you going? Please just tell me.
Do your face.
This is, I mean, congratulations to the Thunder. Congratulations to Sam Presti. Congratulations to Russell Westbrook. I am stunned he took this deal of like this, because if he wasn't going to take the... Again, he walked...
How about this guy has had a bone go through his leg? He might like a little job security. I mean, LeBron's sitting right there, and he could play. Don't you know that? He could play with LeBron. Dude, shut up. Just cover the league. Just say what you're going to say, dummy.
He doesn't cover the league.
No, he covers LeBron.
He covers LeBron.
And now can you imagine him on Sunset Strip?
Oh.
Or Rodeo Drive?
Can I? Rainbow Room? Mm.
Just no, he's just on Rodeo Drive. He's
oh,
just
like, yeah, even talking to high end, but I picture more in like the hipster places.
Yeah, the Rainbow Room is real hipster.
Yeah, you can buy
back
t-shirts.
In 1984.
Yeah,
if he wasn't going to take the again, he walked away.
We thought this was going to be a 1-1.
Yeah.
This is not a 1-1. This is a 3-1.
He walked away from $220 million in Indiana to have the chance to go to L.A. He didn't even
meet
give
with
the Lakers
them.
A meeting.
He didn't even meet with
and,
them.
And
the audacity! He didn't even meet with the Lakers. Doesn't he know LeBron James? We love it. I love L.A.
He didn't even
meet
give
with
the Lakers
them.
A meeting.
He didn't even meet
and,
with them.
And the thing about it was, is if you're going to take a multi-year deal, yeah, he could get to 10 years service
right.
time
mm-hmm.
and then come back on the market and get a big raise. Taking a three-year deal, this is basically him giving a giant hug to Oklahoma City.
A hug that has eluded me from LeBron James all these years.
You can really hear his breathlessness in the H words. A giant hug.
Well, in fairness, he had to walk to his seat. What you got over there, a deli tray? Let's see how fast I can get this down. Brian, you have your still have your napkin tucked into your collar.
To Oklahoma City. I am stunned. I am as stunned by this contract
as I was the last time I saw my penis.
Oh, Fred.
Ooh. So he's too fat.
Yeah, I understand.
Hmm?
Oklahoma City.
Do you think if someone has to tell him what shoes he's got on?
Is there a cup holder in this chair while I'd be sitting in? Because I just purchased the large size Slurpee. Which I mixed myself.
Seems someone's
pina colada cherry and a dash of Coke for the caffeine.
It seems like someone's played a prank on me and I'm not wearing shoes at all.
Oh, Fatty McGee.
Little Fatty McGee. Can't go wrong with a little trip down memory lane.
Stunned. I am as stunned by this contract as I was stunned at the Thunder. In fact, I almost will tell you, I'm going to tell you that this is, this is a bigger accomplishment for the Thunder
yeah.
than trading for him.
Well, I mean, let's not go crazy, but then everything kind of goes Windhorse's way, and he finally gets the LeBron James news, and now he can sit back, kind of kick his feet up and enjoy.
Yeah.
So LeBron came to this decision a few days ago, Zubin. He's been letting some select people in his life know that this was coming. He wanted to, before he made a final decision, go through a process which included speaking with people in the Lakers organization. He was already headed here as long as the Lakers didn't drop the ball, which clearly they didn't. To me, the only surprise about this is that he elected to take a four-year contract. One of the things that he's been doing over the last 4 years, so I take one-year deals, and I will have to say, and one of the things I'm really interested in at this point is what Dan Gilbert and the Cavs' response will be. He's had this planned out. In fact, he's planning to leave the country now and sever ties from all the hoopla that's going to surround this.
Now, do you think Brian Windhorst like puts on a safari hat and just goes like just starts traveling the world looking for LeBron? John, go ahead.
Hey, two things here. I just want to say someday soon, Wallach's got to have his own show. This guy's killing it. This guy's absolutely killing it. Second thing,
Wallach.
When was the last time you saw what was below your belt? All right.
Wait, who? Wait, Wallach? Wallach's not here. I think he might be referring to you.
Probably. But
When was the last time? I mean, this is not disgusting.
No, that's fine.
I certainly can see myself.
Certainly.
Certainly my shoes. I think that my weight is vastly disparaged more than it has to be here.
Let's get to the real important thing here. Which outweighs, should I be insulted at the thought of someone mistaking me for Wallach, or is that balanced out by the huge compliment that Wallach just got paid by thinking that I was him? I mean, which is...
Let's ask Brian Windhorst.
Sorry.
So LeBron came to this decision a few days ago, Zubin.
Oh, you want to ask this guy?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Talking to me about what can't see my junk. My junk is just fine. Listen, my hand is not complaining. All right, here's the deal. Yeah, it's masturbation.
Self-gratification.
I got weird hours.
Someone's got to take care of it.
I mean, you know.
Why bother someone else?
Slip into bed? Nap time.
I think of it like flossing your teeth. Nobody can do that as well as me.
That's a Jon Stewart joke.
The flossing?
No, you added that to the joke. But it's a Jon Stewart joke. When he talks about that, he's like, nice try, but I'm the best at this.
Oh, okay. I've never heard that, but I always feel that way. At the dental cleaning, when they go to floss, like, you really, I don't like anyone else flossing my teeth. Not regularly. Well, once a week, maybe.
Did you used to lie? Well,
no, a couple of times, I would say three times a week I will floss.
Did you used to lie?
To the dentist?
Yeah.
Oh, constantly.
See, I don't know.
Oh, no, I don't lie anymore.
Yeah, I don't lie at all. I'm just like, give me your worst.
Yeah, they say like, so are you flossing? I said, no.
What am I, some kind of hippie?
Yeah, a few times a week. I tell you when I floss, after I eat popcorn. Chicken, which tends to be, something that gets a little trapped in there. And I've got an extra 2 minutes.
I'm not some neurotic freak.
They don't floss in Europe. And look how their teeth are.
All right. Is Joe Haggerty here? He is not. Fantastic. The CBS Sportsman is brought to you by Cambridge Savings Bank.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Five, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. That is, of course, the voice of Don Sweeney. They miss out on John Tavares, who decides to go to Toronto, which is that, did that cost him money?
Yes.
Okay, how much money do you gather that it cost him?
Well, at least $11 million, because the Islanders could offer the extra year at 8 years, and they were going to pay at least 11, so that's 88. He got 77 from Toronto, so just the extra year for the $11 million he didn't get. So he took less to go to Toronto, and I think there were better offers on the table. I think the San Jose Sharks were going to outbid everybody else, and they could have offered somewhere like $13 million a year to try to get him, and he walked away from that and just went to Toronto.
All right, do you think the Bruins were ever seriously being considered?
This is my feeling, right? Whenever a player sets up with his agent in Los Angeles or wherever his agent is and has the teams like come to him and come to his agent and sit down for like a 2-hour informational meeting, if it's a guy that's going to sign a 7-year contract for huge money to go play somewhere, I always feel like on some level those are like fraud exercises. Like they've already kind of made their decision, because like if I'm a player, if I'm John Tavares, right, don't I want to go see like the practice facility and see the place I'm going to be spending most of my time for the next 7 years if I'm going to sign up for a certain team? Don't I want to see kind of the ins and outs, where I might be living, all that different kind of stuff? Like, I felt like in the back of his mind, he probably now in hindsight just wanted to go play for his hometown team. He kind of had it all in mind that he was going to play for the Leafs. Maybe he would go play for the Sharks because they were just putting insane money on the table. But, like, in all honesty to the Bruins, they probably didn't. And I felt like this. I heard this on Thursday night, and I tweeted it out. I didn't hear good things about their shot at that point. And I don't think they really realistically had a chance at getting him. But, like, the fact that they were in on it and they were one of the select teams that he was going to talk to, the fact that the same thing with Ilya Kovalchuk, they were one of the teams that Kovalchuk was potentially interested in playing in, the fact that they're in the conversation with all these elite players, I think it's a great thing for the Bruins, and I think it means players, really good players, want to come and be a part of it, or at least see what's going on and kind of meet the people involved. So even though they lost out in Tavares, I still think it's a good thing.
All right, so now that Tavares is on Toronto, Toronto has young talent that's going to command a lot of money.
Yep.
How realistic is it that Toronto can keep Matthews and, I forget off the top
Marner and Nylander? I think at least one of those guys, they're probably going to have to deal at some point when their contracts are up. But realistically, they could probably keep Tavares, Matthews, and Marner if they don't get any more big-ticket items. But, like, they really need a top-flight defenseman, too.
Right.
I think we saw that last year during the playoffs, that they need a player like that. They need a true number one D-man if they really want to win the cup. And, you know, you're going to have to trade to get one of those guys, and you're probably going to have to pay a lot of money to get one of those guys. So I would think if they still want to make moves to improve their team, at some point, Nylander or Marner, one of those two has to go. I don't see how they can afford all of them.
Back to the Bruins pitch for Tavares here for a second. And if it was his inclination to always go to Toronto and go back and play for his hometown team, and I don't blame him. I don't think it's an awful decision.
No.
You know, I think it's going to be fine. But what is the point?
In some ways, it's a gutsy decision, right? Because they haven't won in a long time. The fan base up there is pre-Red Sox 2004. Like, they're always waiting for the other shoe to drop and for them to lose.
He tweeted a picture of himself as a child with Toronto Maple Leaf sheets.
Correct.
Not the coolest thing.
No, but like, and he also had a Star Wars alarm clock, which I appreciate at the top of his bed, Freddie T.
So,
I noticed you didn't know that, the Naboo Starfighter at the top of his bed.
Now, can you just, for the sake of it, what are you wearing today?
Louisville Bats, Darth Vader, Star Wars jersey.
There you go.
No, but like, to your point, Hardy, like, him going back to Toronto is the tough decision. Like, him going back there, he's putting a lot of pressure on himself, and he's putting himself in the crosshairs where if they don't win, he's kind of coming in being the savior, and if they don't get it done, like, a lot of the blame is going to come to him.
Is it really, though?
I think it is.
That's not the feeling in hockey, because people know it's like you can do everything you can on your line, and you can have get yourself on the score sheet practically every night, but hockey fans, and I would think even in Toronto, they would understand maybe better than anybody that while the one player can certainly make a difference night in and night out, it can't carry a team. One guy can't carry a team.
No, but you could be looked at as a difference maker. When you're paying a guy $11 million a season and he's joining a team that was already in the playoffs and a good young team, you know, you're basically signing on to say, I'm going to be one of the difference makers on this team, and to do it in your own hometown in front of your friends and family. Like, I respect the decision because he's putting a lot of pressure on himself. Toronto's pretty fairly hardcore as far as the media goes there. Like, Dion Phaneuf, they got on Phil Kessel, they get on their players. They had fans throwing jerseys on the ice because they were pissed that the team wasn't good.
When they were playing the Bruins, we looked and they had 11 credentialed local sports guys.
They have more than that. They have a lot more than that.
All right, well, what we saw was 11, and like, we're just beat.
That's what I'm saying.
The Maple Leafs.
They've got beat writers, they've got columnists. Like, there's more than 11 people there. They've got a lot of people there, and it's the biggest market in Canada. It's where all the sort of main people are. You know, it's Hockey Central when you're going through the NHL circuit. And like I said, it's more about the fan base up there. They haven't won in a long time. It's pre-Red Sox 2004, where they're waiting to get angry at the team and get mad because they're losing and are waiting for something bad to happen. And, you know, when players enter into that, especially if they're from there, I think that takes some level of courage. Like, it's, you know, not to put too much on them, but the easy choice would have been for him to go to San Jose, where, like, three people cover the team,
right,
where he was going to make a crap load of money, and there was going to be zero expectations on him, and he could go, like, live on the coast and surf with Jumbo Joe and Brent Burns every day.
But what's
and
the
grow
point?
A beard. That would have been the easy thing to do.
What's the point of taking those meetings? Is it to drive the price up? Because they're not talking money in those meetings. Are they? I mean, that's between the team and the agent. If Tavares is even there, do actual dollar amounts get discussed? And
they're not supposed to get discussed in those pre-July 1st meetings. Like, you can talk about like other things, like his role on the team. You know, what the expectations are. Like, they can kind of sell. He had a phone call with Patrice Bergeron during the 2-hour meeting that the Bruins had. He talked to Austin Matthews during the Toronto Maple Leafs meeting. Like, you can do stuff like that. But with Tavares, he was going to make 11, 12, 13 a year. I don't think there was a lot of mystery as far as how much money he was making. What I think it was you want to go in and see if anybody blows you away and surprises you with something that you weren't expecting. There's a pomp and circumstance level where, like, these elite players all get this now where, you know, they choose their five or six teams. And from what I heard, the Bruins were told about a month ahead of time, hey, Tavares might be interested in you. Like, you know, start getting ready and get prepared just in case you're part of this whole thing. So they kind of knew that they might, you know, be a part of this. And also, you know, maybe part of it, too, is, like, the way you say goodbye to the Islanders is, you know, I had to talk to all these teams. It was a very hard decision. I had to waver between all these teams, when in reality, it probably wasn't that hard for him. I don't think he wanted to practice, in a dumpy practice arena. I don't think he wanted to play in an arena that's got a friggin' white SUV in the corner and is basically a basketball arena in Brooklyn or the asbestos-filled dump Nassau Coliseum.
He didn't want to wait until there was a new arena.
No, because it would have taken a while. But, like, my point is, maybe this was his way of kind of saying to them, it was a hard decision for me to leave you. I had to talk to all these teams. Like I said, for my speaking, I think as soon as you have them come to you in L.A., I don't think it's real. I don't think the other team. He knew, I think he wanted to play for the Leafs ahead of time.
All right, so we'll break 617-779-0985. When you come back, we can talk about what the Bruins did and what it means for the future and what, because they have to make a move now. I mean, they have too much at one position.
Yep.
So we'll have that for you. Here are the headlines.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub. This is the Toucher and Rich radio program. Joe Haggerty covers the Bruins for the NBC Sports Boston, a company we will no longer in the mornings be enjoying being on TV with you.
Oh, no? I didn't even know that.
No.
Oh, that's a bummer.
If it takes away 0.5% of our audience, it is not financially worth it for us. And now we have an opportunity to get out of it, because if we get a bonus, that counters the money that we get paid from NBC Sports Boston. So it just makes financial sense.
Gotcha. I heard you got fired.
Oh, yeah, they fired us.
Well, Freddie T is a firebrand. He's a rebel and a loner.
You know? As I've stated many times in the past, Hardy, this has been a huge joy of mine to be on television.
Yeah.
To be TV ready every morning.
Moments after waking up every day.
No, it's completely financial. If it takes away, in the mornings, I believe that it takes away eyeballs. That more people come up to me and say, I watch you. I don't need you to watch me. The ratings on TV don't matter to me. I don't care if one person watches.
You tell yourself whatever you need to. I heard they hated you and
good.
Didn't want to fire you, but just waited until, like, the contract was up and said, thank God.
Isn't it also true, though, Fred, that, like, you are in places on TV in New England and throughout the country that you wouldn't be necessarily otherwise, correct?
Yes, but these can all be rectified.
Okay.
All right. Now, listen, let me...
whatever that means.
That ain't no kind of answer.
I could be on the radio in markets that this station covers on the radio.
You could go syndicated. I mean, that's always an option,
yeah,
right?
And it is absolutely an option.
There you go.
So here's the deal. It sounds like the Bruins went out there and got themselves three jabronis.
I'm sorry. And to that last point, who in Des Moines would not want to hear about third pairing defenseman
from the
Bruins?
The guy played 20 minutes a night last year for a playoff team, so I'd say he has the potential to be more than a bottom pairing defenseman.
Three jabronis and one guy that interests me. All right, first of all, I didn't say Des Moines. Do you think I'm stupid enough to think that a regional, Boston sports show would play in Des Moines?
He's going for Grand Rapids if he's going anywhere. He's not going to Des Moines.
You would be surprised. All right, so here. So Chris Wagner is whom?
Chris Wagner was third in the NHL in hits last year, behind Milan Lucic.
Oh.
He's a Walpole kid that is going to be a bottom six, like fourth line kind of guy that's going to hit a lot and is going to play with physicality. You know, decent player. It's not big money, but I think he adds an element to the fourth line. And the difference between him and Noel Achari is Noel Achari gets hurt a lot, and I think Wagner is fairly durable. So you're not talking about a guy that's going to be a physical presence. It's going to be in and out of the lineup. He's going to be fairly consistent. So pretty good energy player for little dollars, basically.
All right. Halak has got a lot of people scared.
I don't know why. I mean, his save percentage over his career is better than Anton Hudobin's was last year, when everybody agrees it was Anton Hudobin's best season in the NHL. I mean, Anton Hudobin had a good year. But, like, over the balance of his career, Halak has been much better than Hudobin. It's not even close.
All right, so how were they able to get Halak on short money?
Because I think at 33 years old, you know, he's kind of run through his starting jobs, and I think he's transitioning to being a backup now. He was basically the starter in the Island last year. It wasn't a great season for him, but I think he's at the point where he's moving from starter to backup, and the Bruins are catching him right at that transition time.
And you feel that if a little less wear and tear, he can get back to being pretty good?
Yeah, I think he can be okay. And the thing is, this is the first guy, basically in the history of Tuukka Rask being the starter in Boston, that could legitimately take the job away from him, like, for a long period. I'm not talking three or four games in a row like Hudobin. Like, this is a guy that if he runs in a hot streak, he could play for 2 weeks and Tuukka could, you know, basically sit and not play. And, you know,
and that's always been good for
Tuukka, absolutely. Yeah. And I think this is an even stronger level of competition from Halak than he's never had a legit starting goaltender be his backup, a guy that's been in the league and started for a bunch of teams, started playoff games. We remember with the Canadians where he shut down the Caps and did all that stuff in the postseason way back when. So he's got a lot of experience, and he's got, you know, a decent amount of cachet for a goalie. Now, I'll admit, last year was not good for him. I think a lot of it had to do with an Islanders penalty kill that sucked, and their defense wasn't good. And I think that, you know, affected him for sure. But if you look at the balance of his career, he's been a decent goalie. And I think as a backup, he's going to be really good. I think he's an upgrade over Anton Hudobin. I really do.
So if the Bruins felt that way too, why offer Hudobin the contract?
Because I think it was a comfortable fit. I think he had done the job. I think he got along well with Tuukka. I think there were reasons to at least, you know, make an effort to re-sign him. But I don't know that.
They really 25 or 50 grand apart?
I don't think they were disappointed that they got Halak, put it that way. Okay. I mean, they've got a new goaltending instructor, Mike Dunham, that worked with the Islanders.
What happened to the other guy?
Which other guy?
The guy that used to be on the Red Wings. The goaltending instructor.
Oh, he's still there. This is like a roving minor league instructor, Dunham. Bob Asenza is still there. Dunham works with like the minor league guys, and he's more of a development guy.
So many cooks in the kitchen.
I know, but they still have, it's good to get a guy in the minor leagues, Freddie T, so you can have him work with the Malcolm Subbans and Zane McIntyres of the world so they can develop better, you know?
Okay, so Nordstrom, while we get through, we continue to get through these jabronis, and then we're going to talk about John
Nordstrom's
Moore.
A jabroni. I think you're right on with that one.
Okay.
I think he's a jabroni. He's a Swedish. What is Swedish for jabroni? I don't know. That would be it, though.
Is Swedish for jabroni?
two goals in 70-something games last year.
English.
All right. So
he's a penalty killer, defensive guy. Like, you know, with Schaller and Riley Nash leaving, I think they wanted to bring in cheaper veteran alternatives to some of the young guys. Like if
Are you surprised Riley Nash left?
No, because I don't think they're going to pay him that kind of money. They have young guys in Trent Frederick and Jakob Forsbacka Karlsson that are going to compete for that third line center job. They're going to compete with these veteran guys. And I think these veteran guys are there in case the young guys aren't ready to hack it. I think in an ideal world, what the Bruins want is Trent Frederick or Jakob Forsbacka Karlsson to come into camp, be really good, and claim that third line center job. And then you have an experienced guy on your side in David Backes, who can be help a young kid along if he's on that third line. And I think that's a pretty good situation. But I think these veteran guys are basically insurance, especially Nordstrom, in case those other players aren't ready, the young guys.
All right. Well, okay, when we come back, we'll get to their pick John Moore, or a signing of John Moore, because it's more than just picking up a left-shot defenseman. It means that something has to happen and that there is something in mind. And I don't think
they have a surplus now, Freddie.
Well, and you don't make that signing without knowing you're going to get something else done.
Yep.
So that is what's fascinating with that. We will talk about that in just a moment.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Kutcher and Rich.
Five, the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. All right, now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. We got Joe Haggerty in studio with his wonderful young man there, Finn, growing up before our eyes.
He is.
How old is he?
He's going to be 5 in August, Freddie T. Just finished up T-ball.
Now, will he go to, will he be in kindergarten?
Oh, yeah. He's going to be at the Burr School.
All right, so he's going to kindergarten. Oh. Wrong side of Newton.
Yeah, hey, it's a little bit of an older school, but it gets the job done, Fred. It's got a new playground. That's all that matters.
Hey, that's all that matters. Listen, what do you think that where my kids go to school is up to date? It was built in 1920. All right, so, okay, so we went over the kind of the little pieces that the Bruins have picked up, and we've also talked about how real the Tavares situation was. But they did do something that you have to figure was a move because they know they're going to make another move. They picked up a guy named John Moore, a defenseman for the Devils, had a pretty good year last year, big guy, but this makes him the fourth left-shot defenseman, if I'm not mistaken. All right, first of all, tell me about John Moore, and second, tell me about what you believe is going to happen, what the dominoes, how they're going to fall.
John Moore, former first-round pick, 27-year-old defenseman, was drafted by the Blue Jackets, played for the Blue Jackets, the Rangers, really sort of found himself the last 3 years with the Devils, averaged 8 goals and 20 points a season, went over 20 minutes a game over this last season with the Devils, so he was playing top 4 minutes with the New Jersey Devils, who were a playoff team. So, you know, these are all good signs. Obviously, I think he's a little bit of a late bloomer for a first-round pick, so he had to work to get there. I think he's good puck-moving. He's 6'3", 200 pounds, so he's got good size. I think there are times where he's not the best. This is from talking to people that have watched him play, not always the best in the defensive zone. He's a little more of puck-moving and sort of offense. But at least he's got the size and strength to be able to battle in the D zone and play big minutes and potentially kill penalties, like he can do all those things. So, you know, a perfectly serviceable guy. They're paying him $2.75 million a year, which is not that much. So basically you're paying him either a really bargain rate for a top four guy, or you're paying him kind of going market rate for a bottom pairing guy. Basically they're paying him the same that they're paying Kevin Miller and Adam McQuaid. So we're not talking gigantic, huge money. Like a 5-year term is a fairly significant investment. It tells you he's going to be here for a while, but it's not huge money on the cap. Now, he's on the left side. Torrey Krug is on the left side. Matt Grizzlick is on the left side. Zdeno Chara is on the left side. So you've got a surplus of left-shot defensemen. Obviously, I think this is leading somewhere. And I think it's going to eventually lead to Torrey Krug getting traded. And I think you're going to have to trade. I don't think the Bruins want to trade Torrey Krug.
Right.
Obviously, there's only like 4 or 5 defensemen in the league that have more points than him over the last 2 years. And you're talking like Carlson, Burns, Hedman. You're talking like elite defensemen.
Right.
So, you know, he's great on the power play. He's very good offensively and good puck moving wise. But by the same token, I think he's one of the best trade chips that they have. And I think if they need to go out and trade for an Artemi Panarin, for a Wayne Simmons, for a Jeff Skinner, for those type of forwards to be your second line scorer on your winger.
Old is Wayne Simmons?
Wayne Simmons is 29. He's probably not the guy I would go for if I were right. The Bruins. I'd be looking at Skinner, and I'd be looking at Panarin. And Panarin comes with his own issues. There's questions as to whether he's going to sign an extension with anybody, because he's not going to do that with Columbus right now, and whether he just wants to go to free agency after the year and make big money. So you'll see with him, too. Skinner is also in the last year of his contract. So, you know, you'd like to get some guarantees if you're making a trade and you're trading away a Krug to bring in one of these guys. But they have a missing piece right now. Like, it's an incomplete July 1st for the Bruins, because they are still missing that second-line scorer, that offensive force on the second line that's going to change what we saw last year in the playoffs, where they couldn't score against the Tampa Bay Lightning after Game 1.
Is there a move that they can make that puts them in the same category as Tampa Bay and now in Toronto now that they got Tavares.
I think they can be competitive with those teams. I think they're going to be close. I mean, the shame of it, Fred, is that they could be the third best team in the NHL
right. And
still be the third best team in their division right now because Toronto and Tampa are both very good. Like, you know, I think if you add another scoring component to that second line, I think it would have been a lot more of a competitive series, and the Bruins might have been able to win that series last year against Tampa if they could get scoring somewhere else. Like, let's say if Rick Nash was what they thought he was going to be, I think it could have been a more competitive series, and maybe they could have won. Tampa hasn't done a ton to sort of change what they are and who they are, so I still think they can compete with them. It remains to be seen with Toronto. I mean, on paper, the adding of Tavares to Toronto really raises them quite a bit, their profile. But we're going to have to see it on the ice before we say, oh, this Bruins team can't compete with the Leafs. I mean, on paper, they should be able to if they can upgrade on the wing on the second line.
You know, you mentioned Torrey Krug, and to me, he's that rare version of a player where the Bruins would be absolutely fine with keeping him. Like you said, everything that he does in the special teams,
yeah,
he's a great offensive defenseman, but rare in that they'd be okay without him. And I hate to say it because I like the player. I mean, I like him as a Michigan State guy. I like him as a guest on the midday show and all that stuff. But, you know, he's one of those guys that's valuable as a trade piece. But if they were able to keep him good, I think they'd be okay either way.
Skilled player, good young leader, good guy, very productive, explosive on the power play. There's a lot of things to like, but you're always going to have some problems defensively if he's playing 20-plus minutes a night and he's one of your top four guys. And you're always going to be able to take advantage of him in the defensive zone. Not only that, he's been hurt at the end of the year, both of the last 2 years. And there's questions as to whether he can handle and stand up to the physicality that he faces playing those kind of minutes in the playoffs after a long season of doing it. And when you have him and Matt Grzelcyk, both on the same left side, and you have a guy in Zdeno Chara that's going to be 42. You needed a guy in the middle, a younger guy that was kind of in his prime, like a John Moore, that's a bigger, sturdier defenseman to be there. You needed one of those guys on your left side to make sure, you know, he's going to be there and upright in the postseason. But, you know, I think with Krug, you're going to find teams that need a power play quarterback that look at him and say, this guy is going to improve our offense immediately. He's very attractive to those teams. And you're going to have to give up something to get something. If you want an explosive wing that's going to score goals for you on the second line, you're going to have to give up something to get. And you in-house, shouldn't Charlie McAvoy be the power play quarterback for your team for the foreseeable future? You have a guy that's going to be able to step in and replace what he does in the power play and presumably replace the points that Torrey Krug puts up. You expect Charlie McAvoy to be a 50-point guy every single season, probably score around 10 goals, and you expect improvement from Matt Grzelcyk. So when you trade a Torrey Krug, if you do that, you're also betting on your young players that they're going to develop and fill in the spots that you're making vacancies for by trading Krug.
All right, Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston. Tavares, we figured that out. Now we'll see what they do with their left shooting defensive core. What do you got over there? You got a game?
Yeah, I'm just putting the finishing touches on the game here.
All right. Well, Joe Haggerty, God bless you and your awful Star Wars shirts. we will take no
not as good as your obscure 90s bands t-shirts there, Freddie T, when you wear those. I appreciate that.
Who's obscure?
I don't know. Whoever you listened to was obscure back in the day.
All right. Well, we tend to argue with you, but nonetheless. All right. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy the day with your son.
Thank you, Freddie.
Thank you so much for coming in. There will be no commercials here, just the headlines.